How do you price an ad on your channel? That's probably the most common question we get from other creators. And it was the biggest question we had when we first started on YouTube. So we're hosting a live workshop on how to price yourself. This is everything that we've learned in the past 13 years of being on YouTube and our simple three-step process that'll help you develop concrete pricing. So if you want to join us for this live session, just go to colinandsamir.com/live. Enter your email and you'll get all the information about our live event on May 9th. All right, hope you enjoy this episode of the Colin and Samir Show.
How did I get to this point? It's crazy.
Your profit margin is just like insane.
To get to 10 million to 100 million.
Is that revenue or subscribers?
Revenue.
That's crazy. The NBA and the NFL, they need younger fans.
18 million people saying, yes, I'm interested in this.
We just got health insurance. 401k, I don't know what that is, but I have it.
It's gone from like the Jesser YouTube channel to Jesser Industries.
I was just stacking the money.
What happens next? Like what happens to the way we watch sports?
Oh, wow. That's a good question.
Today on the Colin and Samir Show, we're joined by Jesse Riddell, aka Jesser. To put it simply, young people are not sitting down to watch a full basketball game, but they are watching Jesser's videos. He's collaborating with professional athletes, he has a partnership with the NBA, and he's building out what he wants to be a $100 million sports media company. And we caught up with him at a critical point in this journey. He's about to put out his first nationwide product in Walmart, and he just hired a former Spotify exec to be the president of his company, Bucket Squad. Now, whether you're into sports or not, I think we can all learn something from someone who's been able to build over 18 million subscribers on YouTube. It's a really fun conversation for us to have. I think you guys will all really enjoy this. This episode is sponsored by Spotter. Spotter provides capital, community, and now a suite of AI software personalized for creators. And they do all of this to help accelerate creator careers. Spotter has paid out over $900 million through catalog licensing deals to creators like MrBeast, Kniger Dion, Dude Perfect, Destroying, and Jesser to help scale their productions and teams. And if you've been watching our channel, then you know that Spotter's been working with top creators and AI experts to develop a suite of AI software that helps creators like us brainstorm better videos. One of the tools that we use the most is called Title Exploder, and it solves one of the hardest things about growing a YouTube channel, which is packaging. So here's how Title Exploder works. You can start with a title or an idea, and then from there, you can rephrase it, shorten it, reverb, or explode that idea to give you a ton of different variations. You can edit the titles that the software gives you, and then keep iterating until you find a title that you like. One of the best parts is that Spotter software is directly connected to your YouTube channel, so the ideas are based on your top performing videos as well as the best videos on YouTube. If you're a creator and you want to see if you're eligible to get access to Title Exploder, then you can scan this QR code right here. You can also click the link in our description, or you can go to join.spotter.la. Signing up there will also ensure that you're the first to know when Spotter's AI software gets rolled out to all creators. All right, now for our conversation with Jesser. All right, Jesser, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, bro. It is an honor. You guys appreciate are goats that. Of what you do. Wow. I have so many amazing guests, so happy to be here.
It's Jesse R, right?
My actual name? Yeah. Well, my last name does start with an R.
Right.
Yeah. So
and that's why that's correct. It's Jesser.
Yeah, originally my name on YouTube was Jesser the Laser. So I had that for like a couple of years, okay. And then I dropped the laser. Wow. But yeah.
You outgrew I'm surprised that. You didn't drop the Jesse and just go with the laser.
Yeah. Honestly, that could have been a move.
Yeah. So last night you crossed 18 million subscribers.
Let's go. Congrats, yes. Man. Thank you so much.
How does that feel?
It's honestly like surreal, especially like thinking about way back when I wanted to do YouTube and it was like the top guys all were like a million. And the fact that people have like 18 million subscribers is just an unfathomable number. Like, especially yeah. I was like, how did I get to this point? It's crazy. It doesn't feel real. So it's like a surreal number at this point. Like everything now is like the cherry on top. Mm-hmm. Any like milestone.
Yeah. I mean, that's what we're going to dig into is how did you get to this point?
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, like 18 million people saying like, yes, I'm interested in this. Clearly that's so many people. But I would imagine there are moments when people come up to you, they meet you, they don't know who you are, and they're like, what do you do? Yeah. Like, well, tell me about what you do. How do you answer that question?
I just say I'm a YouTuber. Okay. Like, it's usually parents who ask that. Because I'll be like, I love when parents will like see their kid come up to me and be like, I don't know who the fuck you are, but like my son loves you. I'm like, okay. Like, why do you have to say it like that? But I just say like I'm a basketball YouTuber and I do like challenges, trick shots,
yeah.
Pretty much that's my answer.
I feel like right now you are like by far arguably the most popular YouTuber amongst like young kids. Would you say that? Is that how you describe your audience? Or do you feel like your audience is expanding?
I would say maybe that would be more accurate if it was like basketball-focused kids. Because just kids general, I don't think is much for me. I think there's a lot of creators that are bigger and have more of an audience like that. But I think like my audience, like they really are like, they play sports, they're basketball type of kids. So I would say in that, if you say it like that, it would be accurate.
Got it.
Would you say that the videos you make are videos you would have wanted to watch when you were a little kid?
I think so.
100%. Like you're in the audience essentially.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I definitely think so.
When you talk about like explaining to parents, you know, I don't know how many people know this, but your dad is like a legend in Hollywood. Your dad,
yeah, he's goated.
Your dad is goated in Hollywood. Like he produced Wedding Crashers. That's like one of the greatest movies of all time.
Yeah, I feel like no one ever knows about that because my dad never wanted to be like on camera or anything. So I never just talked about him.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's a executive movie producer. He's done a bunch of crazy movies. Like he did one of the Rocky movies. He did like Wedding Crashers. So it was definitely like growing up. I got to go to set. I think the coolest thing ever is he was doing this movie Four Christmases.
Yeah, I love that movie.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
That movie is actually so good.
It's amazing. So they filmed that in Bora Bora, which is like where everyone goes for their honeymoon and everything. And I was in kindergarten and I got to stay with him for a whole month.
In Bora Bora?
Yeah, like that's on the set and like all of a sudden like Vince Vaughn's there. And he's talking to me and I'm like, oh my God.
That's amazing. Wow. I mean, that movie is so funny, by the way. Just in case people haven't seen that, like I would die on a hill saying that's like one of the best Christmas movies. So,
For the record.
Just so everyone knows.
So did that impact you at all? Like, did that lead you to wanting to be where you are today, seeing your dad make movies and produce entertainment?
I think definitely it had to have an impact, but it's weird because I was never like a huge movie fan, but I was obsessed with YouTube. And like movies and YouTube are so different, but I think just... it's media, so it's. I think it's definitely like part of it is there for sure.
Does he understand what you do, and did he when you started? Was he like, oh, I get it. You're filming yourself, like you're producing entertainment. Like, did he understand it?
I think he understood it in the beginning, especially because like the first videos I would do were like just home skits, like just skits with my brother, which is like, I guess short films in a way, but they're really horrible. But so I think I don't think he really understood it when it was like gaming, when I was doing like Minecraft and 2K. And I don't know if he even really watched them until like it started getting more popular, but I think he gets it more than like the average parent would get.
Right.
Right. What was it that started to get popular? Like when you first took to YouTube?
So it first started to get popular for me. Was like I had uploaded for years like Minecraft and skits. They never got any views until I did this skit. And this skit was called NBA 2K in real life. And it was pretty much, if you played NBA 2K, it's the basketball video game for like NBA. It's so unrealistic, so many of the things that would happen. So we kind of like showed what it would look like doing those unrealistic things in real life, just bit by bit by bit. And I posted that. And then like Bleacher Report posted it. Like all these sports websites posted it. And the video got like 300,000 views. And I gained like 1,000 subscribers in like 2 days. So that was kind of like what started it all.
That's like a light bulb moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're in high school.
I was either a freshman in high school. I think I was a freshman in high school. Yeah.
So you started YouTube when you were 14. Is that right?
No, I started probably like 10 years old, maybe.
10 years old. Wow.
Well, I was making videos, but I don't even think we were uploading them to YouTube because my older brother, James, my brother's 4 years older than me. He does YouTube too, but like he had the original capture card and things, but we would make like sketches and he would just put me in them.
Got it.
I was like in those videos. And then, I was probably like, I don't know if we uploaded all of them. Like I deleted the channels because like kids at school were finding them. We were embarrassed.
Yeah.
So we deleted a lot of old stuff, but maybe like 10, 11, I was uploading YouTube videos and like learning how to edit and everything.
I think about the concept of kids at my school seeing like my home movies I made with my brother. Like I would be super embarrassed.
Oh,
you know, I think that that's like such an interesting part of growing up with YouTube is that you were sharing a lot of your like early creative endeavors and then people could find them And like, as you're going through puberty and like adolescence, you're like, wait, don't watch that.
Yeah, no, it was horrible. Cause I was like the most shy kid ever. Like I wouldn't say anything to a female out of turn, like, right? So it was like my outlet at home to make these videos. And then like once that video got popular, like so many kids at school heard about it. Cause like, oh, this kid had a viral video. And then like, they were like, oh, teacher, you should play it. And the teacher's playing one of my gaming videos. And they were so weird. In front of the whole class, I literally wanted to crawl up in a ball and just like die. It was the worst. And like the older kids on the, because I was on basketball, like the varsity team would like, we'd always be with them. They would like watch the video, like make jokes and shit. I'd be like, oh, I hate it here. I hate it so much.
You know, that is weirdly common that like a shy kid in school makes it on YouTube.
I feel like it is.
And I wonder what that, like, is it just like the sense of control or like freedom of expression when it's, you know, yourself? Because I've also noticed while we've been sitting here, you're pretty comfortable staring down the camera lens and talking to the camera lens. And that's like a whole different relationship, right? Mm-hmm. It's like when you're alone in a room looking at a lens, like, why is that more comfortable than when you're at school?
Yeah, it's definitely interesting, especially... Over time, I've lost the shyness just being forced in so many situations, but I think it is easier to talk into a camera lens, even though there's like, oh, you could be talking to millions of people, but it's like, you're really not. Like, you're just you're just talking to this, like a camera. So it's like, I don't know. It's just, it is a lot easier for some reason, especially as a shy person. Like, I know there's a lot of people who aren't shy at all, but then when you film them, they get really shy. So I was like the opposite. So like when a camera's on, I think just over doing it for so many years that like, it like gives me energy or it like makes me ready to go in a weird way. I don't know what it is, but it's like a switch.
Yeah.
So when you make NBA 2K in real life and it gets 300,000 views, it's shared all over. You're like a freshman in high school. Is that a moment where you're proud, or in that moment too, are you kind of like, oh no.
Oh
like,
no, I was so hyped.
You were
I was so hyped.
And other people thought it was cool.
Yeah, it was because like I've been uploading, like I had hundreds of Minecraft videos before that video came up. And it was like the one basketball video I did well. But it's like, I was always trying to get to have subscribers. Like I wanted to be a YouTuber and I knew that before I even posted that video. Like I knew I wanted to be a YouTuber full time. And the reason for that, my favorite YouTuber was Pro Syndicate. He was doing like a live stream and someone asked him like, well, what do you do for a job? And he was like, oh, I'm just a YouTuber. And like, I vividly remember watching that and being like, oh my God. You can do this as a job, like as a 10-year-old. And then ever since that day, I was just going hard on YouTube to do it as a job. But then, yeah, so it's doing it for like those hundreds of videos and never getting any views, like 10, 30 views a video. And then having a video get hundreds of thousands, it was like, oh my goodness, this is what I've been chasing for
That's
so long.
That's the dopamine rush.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah.
What'd you do next?
So then after that, I switched to doing 2K content and I started, this was 2K14. So I started consistently posting that. I posted like part the follow-up, just making that video again. And then that one did even better than the first one.
Oh, interesting.
And then from that moment, I had like 3,000 subscribers. And then I kept uploading 2K every single day. And I was getting 1,000 views a video now from that, just getting that little audience. And I was just doing that every day. And that's kind of where I went from there.
So did you know what it meant to do YouTube as a job at that? Obviously, you're super young.
Like, I just knew that that's all he did. What he did with his life. He just made videos.
So at that age, being a kid who's like into basketball too, like I remember when I was a kid here, I grew up in LA. This is a shirt I bought at the Great Western Forum watching the Lakers play. And I was like, I want to play basketball when I grow up. Now, when you're a young kid, like 9, 10 years old, that's in your mind, you're like, that's a total reality. Mm-hmm. I want to be an NBA player. Until you know, at least me, like a 5'6" Indian kid starts to grow up. And you're like, well, and you've seen me play basketball.
I see. You've been hooping, bro. You hit some game winners last time we played.
You hit me. That was I've watched that highlight 100 times.
For the record, I didn't even make that team.
Right. Colin didn't get picked.
Yeah. I didn't get picked. So that's where I'm at.
Our team was absolutely stacked.
Yes, sir.
Like, this was at Spotter Summit in Montana. But you, me, Ryan Trahan, Mr. Beast, and Mateo. That was like...
We went on a 9-game
We were 9-0.
And we had some comp, bro. Dude Perfect, the Twins were going against us. It wasn't just, you know, people who didn't know how to hoop, but there was some.
But Jimmy stacked the team.
Okay, so basically
let's just call it like it is.
Yeah. Yeah, Jimmy Stack.
I tried to join the team.
He was like, not you.
He was like,
not
you.
I actually was shocked when he picked me, but I was like, okay, sure, yeah, I'll play. But where I was going with this was, like, there was a time in life where being an NBA player was like, when you grow up, you're like, that's what I want to be. I want to play basketball. Was that a thought, or was like, YouTuber was just so much more appealing? Because when you're like 10 years old, you're into basketball. Like, that's
so for me, I think, because when I started playing basketball, I'd already had this goal of wanting to be a YouTuber because I played soccer before, but I never was thought to be like a pro soccer player. Like, I never was on like club teams or anything. So I like going into basketball, like it was my hobby, the sports.
Got it.
But I didn't have the NBA dreams because I still was like, I just want to be a YouTuber. That's what I was focused on.
And when did the videos start making money? Like, were you 14 when all of a sudden you get like an AdSense check, or did you not have monetization on, or like, when did you realize like, oh, actually this could be a job?
I think it was so the year, so I was 2K14, like 1,000 views videos. You're really not making like anything, but I think that next year my videos went from like 1,000 to like 100,000 pretty fast all of a sudden.
Still 2K, or were you doing?
Yeah. So like when 2K14, when the new one 2K15 came out, my views just did way better. All of a sudden I went from like 1,000 to 100,000 a video. So that it was in 2015. So I guess I was a sophomore. I started making like decent money off AdSense.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Mm-hmm. And so like when you're playing games on YouTube, like there's no content ID rights from the game. Like the game's not claiming content. You can just monetize playing games.
Why do you think you had that jump from 1,000 to 100,000? Is it just because there was a new game and not that many people were making videos about it?
I think the reason my channel got popular is because if you think about the NBA 2K community back in like 2014, it's very like, you know, Chris Smoove. It's just like not really any editing, just cut comms, like post commentary, not even showing face cam. But at the time, like my favorite YouTubers too was like KSI, Rotoshaw, the FIFA community. And if you watch the FIFA community back in 2014, their videos were crazy edits, like crazy pace, like these giant wagers, like such epic videos. And then I was, because I watched those videos, I didn't watch 2K YouTubers. I took like so much inspiration from them. And then I brought it to 2K with my videos in 2015. I kind of like took their style, emulated it into 2K, and no one else had done that style. And then that kind of became the style over time.
Interesting.
Because it was just, the FIFA community is always ahead of the 2K community on YouTube. So it was like, I was part of that catching up phase, I guess, or like helping bring that to that. But I think that was the difference. And like, I was doing videos people hadn't done in the 2K community. So I think that's what made the jump from like going up to like 100K video.
So was there a moment in high school where you're starting to get 100,000 views a video and you're sort of starting to care less about high school?
Oh yeah, like sophomore. Once the video started doing like well, and I was like, oh my god, like I knew like once they were getting 100K views a video, like I could do this full time. Like that's enough to go full time. So yeah, I mean,
meaning from a revenue perspective, that was enough to go full time.
Well, I mean, I didn't know 15. The numbers, but I was like, I didn't spend anything because I didn't know how to spend money. Like start making money, like never spent money like that. So I was just stacking the money. But yeah, and then sophomore year, junior year, I was like, I was definitely no, like after high school, I'm done. I'm going to go do YouTube. But then junior year, I was like, I was looking at all the ways of how to not go to school senior year. So I found you could do a test. And if you take the test, it's all like the California high school exit exam. Mm-hmm. You don't have to go senior year. It's like a mini GED or something like that. I don't know the specifics, but I took that test. So I didn't have to go senior year. So I could just do YouTube. Full time.
And were your parents supportive of that?
Yeah, they're actually super supportive because my dad was supportive because he like saw I was making the money, and then my mom wanted to move out of California at the time. Mm. And so if I graduated a year earlier, she could move out a year earlier. Oh, so she was like, we need to do this. Like, let's do this.
What were the like AdSense check sizes at that time? Or do you remember the first one that came in where you were like, oh, wow, that's like real money?
I genuinely don't remember the numbers. I just remember when I moved out of that senior year, like I moved into like a YouTube house or whatever. I had like 200 or 300K in the bank from doing it.
$200,000 or $300,000?
Yeah, just because I never spent any of it besides packs on 2K. I would spend a lot of money on.
But crazy for a 16-year-old. Yeah, like that's completely insane.
But I was like 17, like after that summer of junior year, I think I had that much money just sitting there.
Oh, so you were confident. Like you were like, oh, I can actually move out and pay rent and like do this. Yeah. Wow.
Did you feel like, oh yeah, this is what I wanted to happen. Like this is what I expected to happen. Or did it feel like, oh my gosh, this is this super rare thing. How did this happen to me?
I definitely always feel like that. Like the fact that I'm able to do this, because this is what I dreamed about doing. So always feel like extremely blessed. But yeah, I would say I just always felt like, I can't believe this happened. I'm moving into a YouTube house. Like this is the dream, be a YouTuber, live with other YouTubers. Like
I find for me, it's a mix of the two of like, I feel like we've had the confidence that like we would do something, you know, like we would make something happen. We'll work hard over a number of years. But even still to this day, yesterday, I'm just thinking to myself, like, I can't believe this. Like this is real. Yeah. This worked.
Yeah. This job is the biggest blessing. Like I still cannot believe it.
And I think the other commonality amongst people who are successful on YouTube are people who have had years where they uploaded videos that no one watched. Because that means you're building a habit and you actually are into it. Like you're not there for the reward of people watching. But like, I remember when 300 people watched one of our videos and I was like laying in bed with my heart pounding, being like, 300 people and watched our video? That is crazy.
It'd be gas, bro.
Yeah. Like when it used to go 301, when it used to go 301 plus.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that in the beginning?
Yeah, yeah.
And you'd be like, 301 plus, how many people could it be? Like yeah, maybe there's thousands of people.
Yeah, if you got the 301, bro, you were on top. Especially back then.
Yeah.
Totally. Wow, that's amazing. I think that's like one of the questions, you know, like a classic question about the internet now is that like not understanding why people watch other people play games. Mm. You know, that's like a classic kind of misunderstood part of the internet, but it is pretty amazing the economy that was created by the allowance of playing video games online, right? Like NBA 2K just being like, yeah, that's good promotion for us that you're playing and you get paid to do it. That's pretty significant. Like what an economy that was developed out of
thin air.
Yeah. Out of thin air.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like, crazy.
I can't stop thinking too about the moment probably where you told your friends on the basketball team you weren't coming back.
Oh, I remember the end of junior year. I didn't say anything to anyone.
You just ghosted?
Yeah,
you were Irish exited from high school?
Like my good friends, I told that I wasn't coming back, but I didn't tell anybody else.
That's so funny. Wow. Yeah.
That's so interesting to me that you can like, you stop playing the sport at the school, but then you make videos about the sport.
Yeah.
Junior year, I didn't play on the basketball team because it just took up so much time. Oh. And I just wanted to make videos. And then it would be like, oh, you have to go back to school for 2 hours for practice and be like, bro, like when you play on the team, sometimes there's no time for anything but homework and sports. So it's like, I just couldn't play again.
Yeah, that's amazing. So when you move into this house, you're in like a YouTube house with like other 16, 17 year olds?
No.
Like, or was there like an adult?
No, so I moved in with Christopher London, who we like, he was also doing 2K videos at the time. He might have been like 22, 23. I don't know. And then Zach, who the traveling gamer, who's my boy too, but I remember I didn't even know Zach when he moved in. Chris was just like, oh, my boy's gonna move in. I was like, hell yeah. Like I seen one of his streams and then, yeah. So it was like the three of us all moved in together. And Zach, it was so interesting. He was an electrical engineer. So he would just be gone for like 2 months and then he'd come back.
Oh, he had like a real job.
Yeah. So he still had a real job at the time, but he was also a streamer.
Interesting.
So that was fun.
And is that when you transitioned from making gaming videos to more like IRL content? Like you're actually, you know, in the videos.
So I started experimenting with those, but a majority of my content was still like gaming 2K videos. But I would do a lot of like sketches in the videos and different things where I'd leave the room or like go film like a bit, like, oh, me training, doing pushups at the park to get ready for this wager. And just, so I'd take the camera out a lot. And then we started like experimenting doing like, we had a mini hoop in our house. So we'd do like dunk contests, like so many videos on the mini hoop in the house.
Got it.
So did you grow exponentially once you were in a house and you're only focused on YouTube?
Yeah. So I moved in at like 600,000 subscribers when I moved in. And then I think that first year maybe gained like another, no, my growth was never like too crazy. So I think that first house, we kept moving houses, but I hit 1 million subscribers like at the end of our lease in that house. So maybe it took like a year to gain like 400,000, maybe. I think we were there for 1 year. So yeah, like a year to gain like 400,000 subscribers.
And is that house, is that where your crew developed, that like the Two Hype crew?
It was like the start of the
that was the
start of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was obviously, I would imagine, as like a young person, like it's very appealing to be like a crew.
Oh yeah. Right. It's always better. Like I always pushed my homies to do YouTube and like, and a lot of them do it full time. Like my best friend growing up is a YouTuber. We still make videos like every day together. And then my brother does YouTube. So I was like, it's so much better being able to do stuff with your homies and like grow together than by yourself. So I've always loved like the doing stuff with others or having like connections with other creators. It's been always an
did
important
that
thing.
Creating a crew, did that create any complications though as well of like, we're now doing this as a business together?
Not really. Cause like the only reason we made the crew name is cause like we didn't start with a group channel or anything. Yeah. We just were like, okay, we all make videos together. We need a name. Cause like everyone like, cause people would call us the 2K house. Mm. That was like our first name. And then we were like, okay, we don't want to be the 2K house. Like let's come up with our own name instead of being like 2K. Cause that's like the game's name. Yeah. So that was really the reason of like doing the group name and just so we had that. And then it wasn't until like 2 years after we made a group channel.
Got it. And what did you learn from, I guess, that experience of starting a group channel and like, what's that like?
I think the group, it was definitely like just so much fun having the group, but it was definitely like looking back, we would film all of us. It was like 6 to 8 of us at the time. We would all film in the same day, just one video after another.
Wow.
And I was like the first person to have a cameraman, so he would just film for everyone. But it was just so much fun because like the videos were like, okay, we're all going to sit on the couch, play a game for 30 minutes. We bang out like 4 couch videos. Now we're going to go to our backyard and we have the basketball and do 4 basketball videos. And then we had that schedule going, but like looking back, it's like, damn, we were filming just all day for like 8 channels.
What were you learning about? Fun. What were you learning about YouTube at this time in terms of like what types of ideas could work or what the relationship was with the audience? Like, were these foundational years of learning how to make a YouTube video, I guess?
Yeah, I think so around like 2017, I would say this is time was like, I never looked at the analytics at all. Like I never looked at a retention graph or anything like that. And then how you were talking about basketball earlier, Mateo.
Yeah.
So Mateo like cold emailed me like, yo, I do analytics. Like, we should work together.
During that time?
Yeah.
Wow.
Wait, so that was in like 2017?
Yeah.
For you guys who don't know, Mateo is what, Mr. Beast's chief strategy officer now?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He must have been super young at the time too.
He was in college.
Okay.
But yeah, he messaged me. He was like, do you want to do like analytics reports? And then he did one for me and he was like, your real life basketball videos get 3 times the views of your other videos. And I was like, oh shit, let me just do real life basketball videos this month. And I only did real life basketball videos that month. And then it was like my record views for the month. And I was like, oh, I should probably look at analytics. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing that like a stranger will reach out in this industry.
Yeah.
Just because there are people who are passionate about it.
Yeah.
Who will like just go out of their way to like help you. No strings attached sort of at that time.
Yeah. Like, and then I just started working with him, like just paying him to do analytics.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
We go back.
Interesting.
We go way back.
I thought we were all just teammates. In Montana. Yeah. I didn't know you guys had history. Yeah,
we've been plotting that game for a long time.
That's really cool.
So with that change, what changed with like either the business or the impact that you were seeing in front of your eyes? Like were people starting to recognize you like crazy? Like what happened there?
Because now you're on camera.
Yeah, now you're on camera.
Mm-hmm.
People like really recognize your face and you're growing a lot.
I think once we did like the group videos and it was like, cause it's not only like my videos I'm in, I'm also in like 8 other people's videos. Like we definitely would get recognized a lot, especially if we go anywhere basketball related. Like, cause we would go to like, at the time we lived next to Chino Hills and LaMelo Ball was like going crazy.
Oh yeah.
So we would go to his games and do like vlogs. Just, that was the video. Just go watch the game vlog. The video's done. Like it was so easy back then. Oh, I miss those days. But yeah, we get recognized a lot at anything basketball related. But if I went and did something non-basketball related, probably not get recognized.
Yeah.
Was there a moment like when a NBA player reached out for the first time where you were like, oh my gosh, this person's watching?
Forget the year, but Ball is Life, this basketball company, was having they have their like Ball is Life All-American game with all the top high school kids. And we went to the practice and De'Aaron Fox was there. And me and Chris were like, oh my God, De'Aaron Fox is here. Like, this is so cool. And like, we were like, we have to say something to him. So we like got our cameras and we went out to him and he's like, oh, what up, Jesser and Chris? And we were like,
what? That's
crazy. And he knew like all the different 2K YouTubers and he was just the nicest dude ever. And it was just like the most surreal moment. We were like, oh my God, De'Aaron. I think I titled my video like De'Aaron Fox watching my videos, ? Like from the vlog.
I mean, that's a crazy sense of validation. And I always think about with YouTube creators, like there's these almost like checkpoints that keep you going. They almost give you like a power boost when these moments of validation happen. It could be when you cross a million subscribers. It could be when you find out that someone watches your videos. It could be like when you make a certain amount of money. Like, what were those big moments of validation for you, or like boosts for you? Was it finding out that certain people watched the channel?
I think the number one was definitely a million subscribers.
Yeah.
Because that just took so long, like 7 years of uploading videos or something like that. So that was always the big one. And then I think 10 million was like the next one in terms of like the validation type of thing. So I would say the subscriber metric was definitely it.
Interesting. And as you start working with Mateo, are you starting to get more into the analytics, or are you just listening to his ideas? Like, is it just like...
His stuff was very analytical, like all these spreadsheets, numbers, and he would just break it down in a call. So that, like, I learned from him, like, oh, we should look at this or look at all these different things. So
what were those things like?
It was definitely like the, I think the study that I was saying earlier is he like put all the different types of videos I do and then the average views each one of those videos gets. And then he showed that to me and I was like, oh, wow. Like, why am I not doing more relay basketball? He's like, you should. And I only did it for a month and it just went crazy. So I think that is super helpful. And that's the one I still do to this day, is like, okay, let me just organize which of these get the most views.
Like organized by format.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That feels like it's very right now. Like you're, if you're watching a bunch of creators, you start to recognize like once a format hits, right? Whether it's $1 versus, you know, $100 million from Jimmy, right? Like the $1 versus was a format that worked really well for him. Or Ryan Trahan's like one-star reviews. And once you see one hit, you see them that do like a ton of iterations of that and start to build upon that format.
I feel like that's like the YouTube philosophy is like, okay, I don't know what your magic number is, but it's like, I'm going to do, if I'm uploading 7 videos, 5 of them, I know I've already done, tested, they do well. Mm-hmm. 2 of them are experiments. If the experiment does good, do it one more time. If it bangs twice, it gets to that. It adds to the bucket of these do good. I'm going to keep doing these.
Yeah.
And it's just, I feel like if you do that and you're constantly adding the experiments in there, it's just,
I think that's the thing, is the balancing act of, I know this works and this is a brand new experiment. Because as you start to grow, those experiments start to take on a new level of risk. Like, was there ever a period for you as you're growing where you were like afraid to experiment, or like felt like the stakes were really high? Like if you uploaded one bad video.
Definitely. I think for me, that was getting out of gaming, like out of 2K was really scary. Especially more once I got into the analytics part of it, because before, like, I thought about any analytics, I wouldn't care. I would just be like, okay, I'm gonna do a vlog today, or I'm gonna try to bake a cake without instructors, whatever sounds right. Like, I would just sit down in the morning and be like, what am I doing today? But then when you see the analytics side of it, it's like, okay, I probably shouldn't do that. I know,
there's a real freedom to the life before you get to life before there's such a creative freedom to that life. I know, once you get into it, man, you're just like,
but it works. That's the thing.
It works. It's like, I know. But that's when you change from being like creative and free to being strategic. And obviously this is a business and we're entrepreneurs, so we're going to be strategic. And a lot of us are also into like games. And YouTube is this game where if you like tweak this thing, then this goes up. And you're like, oh, that's fun. Yeah. I like it when the numbers go up.
Yeah. And we trust those numbers at least a little bit more so than like, it's hard to know how to read a certain amount of comments or see people tweet about your video and know, you know, in what that means stacked up to the next video or the video before that. Like the metrics are just all we sort of have, right?
It seems like up to now, like everything's pretty linear and growing up into the right for you from 0 to 1 million and a bit beyond. From 1 million to now to 18 million, like what were the big, were there big challenges?
Yeah, I would say there was definitely a moment where it was everything kind of changed. Because for, let's say like starting in 2014 on the main channel, like uploading a lot, I think it's, I was 7 years in, I was at like 3 million subscribers. So it was very like slow, steady growth, good community. But pretty much what happened is like, I was like, I want to grow. Like I see all these people growing. I'm like, I feel like I gained like 10,000, 20,000 subscribers a month pretty consistently, like every month for the last couple of years. And I was like, am I not working hard enough? What am I not doing? So I was like, I'm going to daily vlog. Right. So I was like, that's how you can't work harder than the daily vlog. Yeah. Like that is
a classic YouTube thought.
We've all been there.
So I start doing the daily vlog and instantly my views start dropping. But I'm like, whatever, fuck it, next day. You're not even worried about it because you're worried about the next day.
Yeah.
And I'm like 25 days in and I get mono, bro. And I'm just out. Like I can't vlog. I'm just in bed, horrible sickness. And in that
did you do a mono vlog?
I did, bro. I'm literally like at the doctor's office crying because I'm like, I can't do the vlog anymore.
That's
like,
because
I was like, I was months of like, I'm gonna commit to this.
And that's the universe though, just telling you, like, hey, like, pump the brakes, man.
Yeah,
like,
I'm literally crying on camera about being sick and not being able to continue my
mono, just stop. Just
please stop.
The moment it was like the world was going down on me, but it was a blessing in disguise because then. When I was sick, I was like, you know what? The daily vlogs really weren't working. My views are all down. Like, and then that's when I started working with Patty Galloway, the GOAT. And then he was looking at my vlogs and he basically like what stuck with me. And I think that made the shift for my channel and everything. He was like, okay, all your vlogs are very catered towards your audience. Like daily vlog is really like building. It's just like you don't grow, but you just... You give your community, it's like all inside jokes. So I'm starting off the videos with inside jokes. Like, and I'm watching these. I'm like, if this is a new viewer, like they do not know what's going on or like they're going to leave.
Yeah.
And he was like, okay, you have to make videos that your current audience will like and new viewers will like. And I never thought about that at all. It was like 2019 or 20 maybe. And then I basically, after that, I tried doing videos that I was like had really broad general appeal that new viewers would like. And then the videos went from these daily vlogs that were doing like 200-300K a video then to like very fast, a million views a video.
What's an example of one of those titles that would be like more broad appeal?
So I think the one that like set it off was like going to 3 NBA games in 24 hours. It was like, that was the first one that just banged off the gate.
And I think then that's the first Jesser video I've watched, which was, I think it was more than that though. It was more than 3.
Well, yeah, so 3 was part one. Then that bangs. Yeah. I was like, let me do this again and again.
A concept that you came up with Patty, like in one of your sessions together, or how'd that come about?
I don't know where I thought of it. I don't think it was in one of those sessions, but he probably was like, you should do this, I can imagine. But yeah, that's kind of what started it off was that video in particular.
Yeah, I ended up watching, that's my first video of yours I watched. I don't remember which one it was, but you go to a ton of games. I don't know.
It's like, I go to so many NBA games.
You go to so many NBA games in this video. And I was like, this is an interesting concept because looking at the title and thumbnail, it's interesting. The title's interesting and it seems impossible. So and I think that's what makes a really good title thumbnail is it's like, that seems impossible. I think of it as like a, almost like, a good packaging is like the magician pulling a rabbit out of a hat where it's like, okay, I know that didn't just happen exactly like that, but I enjoyed the illusion of it. Mm-hmm. And a good title thumbnail is like an illusion where it's like, I went to X amount of NBA games in 50 hours and you're wearing like 3, you know, jerseys. Yeah. And I'm like, I can't imagine that's exactly what happened, but now I'm curious, you know, now I'm curious enough to click. So that's the one that got me. That's the first one that
makes sense. That the one video, like, let me make this for new viewers, and it worked.
What were those sessions with Patty like? Like, I hear a lot about working with Patty Galloway, and I'm intrigued by the fact that you grew up as an athlete and into sports, and you clearly have had different like coaches. Mm-hmm. Or like, do you think about it like that? Like, you're more receptive to working with someone like Patty because of your relationship to having coaching.
I never thought about it like that, but I guess, I feel like sports is very like, you have your coach, you listen to them, and I guess it's very similar. Like, I've always tried to get like mentors and coaches, so I feel like he was definitely that for me.
Yeah.
But I guess a session working with him is like, he'll break down the video we posted. So like, just break it all down, like what went wrong, what was good about it. So that was like a majority of the call. And then, you know, presenting to him, like, what do you think of these new ideas? And then getting his thoughts there. I mean, that was the big one. It's just like breaking down the videos and like, okay, every video would be like, what do we do? How do we make this better next time? Because I remember, and then he did it. He showed it. I was so hyped in his vids, VidSummit.
Oh, yeah.
He did like a presentation thing, and it was like the going to 3 NBA games. It's like the next one was going to 5 NBA games. Yeah. And it was like a 17-minute video, and we fixed everything from the first one. That he was like, you could have done this better. You could have done this better. And then the retention was like 70% on like a 17-minute video. And it.
What were some of those fixes?
Oh God, what were they? It's been so long. I think like, I know one is like, once I get to the final game, just end the video because like you completed the challenge. So it's like, if you notice on all my videos, once I get to the final arena, I'll literally end the video in the first quarter. I'll be like, I made it to the arena. I'm out.
That's it.
Because people stop. We noticed people stop watching once I completed the challenge.
Basically, if there's nothing else to wait for.
Yeah.
Unless you introduce something brand new. You're like, now that I'm at this stadium or arena, I need to do X. But if you don't do that, then... Yeah, it's done.
So I think that was one that I remember that stuck out as like a learning. Okay, let's try to do this next time.
Right.
And then I think the other thing though, like once it all clicked is like at the time, that was right when I got my office space, like a warehouse. Mm. And that's also at the time where I started building out a team because I realized all the other YouTubers had a team. Like I remember I went to Preston's warehouse and this dude had like 20 people running
Preston
around.
Has
I was
a
like,
real operation.
I was like, what is going on?
Preston
what
plays,
do these people
the
do? Yeah. I'm like, here with like four people. Like, and then I was like, okay, I need to make a team. Like, I need to learn. So I started like talking to other YouTubers who had teams and just like asking everyone, like, how do they do it? What do they do? What are all these people for? So then I started like reinvesting everything into the team at the same time. So then I had a bunch of great people around me, like Patty and then a bunch of other people on my team who are amazing. And then it became way more of like a group effort making these videos than just me and like
were
one
you
other
doing
person.
All the editing or it was you had a filmer editor before?
I wasn't editing at this point. I stopped editing when I was around like 2 million subscribers. I stopped editing.
Got it. Mm-hmm. How did you know like how to hire these people and what to pay them? Because like
how to even have a company.
Yeah, you're pretty young at this time.
I mean, it's definitely just asking like what other people are paying. And then, I mean, it was like, Trav, I was like, okay, we got to get another PA. He's like, oh, my boy would be down.
Got
so then we hired his boy. And then like the other person was a childhood friend. So it was just like people I knew. I was like, oh, you wanted to come work for me? And then over time, you learned like to, it's really just talking to people like friends of friends or like, do you know anyone who would want to do this? I think that's how we got like pretty much everyone in the early days was just friends of friends.
Was there a moment where, you know, okay, you've brought on a team and now you're thinking beyond videos, like you're thinking merch, you're thinking events, you're really trying to expand what the universe is?
Yeah, so I always had merch since like 2016. And then it wasn't like I was doing it with another company called Baller's Life and they were great. But it was like I didn't own the merch company. It was kind of just like working for them. My merch was on their merch site. So then, yeah, building the team, I was like, okay, I want to make the basketball clothes Bucket Squad my own thing. So that was like we stopped working with them and then made our own company for that. So it's definitely thinking of like, okay, this is becoming a business and trying to learn like, because I used to not think anything business. Like all my thought was like, what video am I making today?
Yeah.
But now definitely like as you get a team and you're managing all these employees and it gets bigger, it's like, okay, it has to be a business now. Like this is a business.
Has to be.
Yeah. That's a funny moment because there is a time where you're just like making videos, you're receiving, I mean, I assume primarily AdSense revenue early on.
Yes,
or did like, you have brand deals?
I had brand deals as well, but ad revenue is always like 80%.
Who was brokering the brand deals at the time? Were you signed?
Yeah, I was signed. I was with Long Haul Management.
I don't know who that is.
I don't know. Yeah. They do a lot of the basketball creators.
Okay, got it.
They're like a sport, mainly sports. I think they also do MatPat.
Oh, okay.
It was just like MatPat and the basketball creators. Oh, interesting. Bread and butter.
Interesting.
I was with them for a while.
It's interesting because like all of that happens with basically no overhead, right? Like it's just you and your friend who's filming. So like your profit margin is just like insane at that era.
Oh yeah, it's like 95% profit margin. Yeah,
exactly, it's completely insane. So you don't really have to think. And then as you get into hiring people, all of a sudden your overhead is heavy. Mm-hmm. It's like, wait, hold on. I'm paying like 5 people every month. So now this is a business. Mm-hmm. And you also have editors, which means, I don't know if you felt this, but you're like, now I have to make videos so they have something to do.
Yeah, is that a shift? Yeah.
Which is like, a funny shift.
Yeah, it's like now I'm like responsible for all these people's like livelihood if I stop uploading or just went away. So it definitely adds a layer of pressure.
Yeah.
It's definitely funny because it's like, I feel like it's such a shocking moment for me was like learning, oh, like most big companies, they have like 10% margins, if that. A lot of them are losing money. And then I'm like, oh my God, like I've had this like 95% profit margin for all these years. And now it's nowhere near that. Now I'm like more like a real company's profit margin.
But, yeah, it's weird because it's like there's such a beauty to that simplicity. And then there's this desire for growth. Like, where do you think your desire for expansion and growth came? Because you, there's a world where you could just kind of continue with a pretty small team, you know, and just make videos.
I think I really, really wanted to hit 10 million subscribers, like so bad. So then I was like, all these people have 10 million. They all have teams. So I was like, I got to level up, adapt, get a team. So it was really like wanting to hit that milestone was like the reason.
What would you say now is one of the biggest struggles you have in terms of like where you're at as a creator? Is it, you know, having a big team? Is it getting access to the right people, the right NBA players to be in your videos? Like what is it now that you feel like, man, if I could just unlock that?
I feel like the thing that's been the biggest struggle for me for the last year and a half is like having the right focus in terms of like, I feel like I have so many different things going on that I'm not focusing enough. And I even had a thought earlier this year, like, oh, should I start another company or like a subscription service? But then I came to the conclusion, like, no, I can't spread out my focus anymore. Like, it's already too thin. So I think just feeling like I have enough time for each of the different things I'm working on has been like the biggest struggle. So or, like figuring out the balance between all those things.
A bit of it is like opportunity overload, actually. Like there's a lot of opportunity in front of you and it's being able to filter out and focus.
Exactly. I think that's been the hardest thing, which is a blessing to have. Yeah, it's totally, a good problem to have. It is, but it is a problem.
It's pretty common amongst creators because as you grow, like you also see your friends doing all this other stuff, right? Like you see people launching companies alongside their YouTube channels or expanding to multiple channels, right? Like I'd have to imagine as you, did you hit 10 million before you launched your other channels or did you launch your other channels right as you started?
No, so I had one other channel, but I had that since like when I started my main channel in like 2014.
Which one?
Jesser is my main channel. And then my second channel is called JSR. Now it's Jesser Reacts, but I had that channel like because I would do playthroughs of like random because I random games or just like horror games and stuff that wasn't sports related.
Yeah.
So I would just throw that on there.
What's the current landscape of like how much content you put out in a month across what channels?
Right now, the goal for this year is to put out like 2 to 4 long form videos on my main channel.
A month?
A month.
Okay.
Try to do 2 shorts a week, maybe more if I can. And then 10 videos a month on the React channel.
10 videos a month on React.
And that was we were originally going to do 20 a month.
20 a month?
But we decided to scale back after the Spotter Summit because everyone was like longer videos and our videos were like 8 to 10 minutes.
Mm. Yeah, that I mean, I think that is the current, you know, era of YouTube is longer form content, which is interesting. Like I think we talked about it at Spotter Summit. It was like 20 to 40 minutes is like the sweet spot, right?
Exactly.
But I imagine your React channel is probably the profit leader of your company.
In terms of ad revenue, but it doesn't get anywhere near the sponsor deals of the main channel, but it does. It makes more on ad revenue because they just upload more.
Got it. Mm-hmm. And so today with 18 million subs, like what does the company look like? Because you also recently hired a president.
I did.
Which is
shout out to my boy Zach.
Yeah, Zach. he's awesome. But I don't know how else to say this, but that's like a real adult employee.
He's the oldest employee probably.
Yeah, but Zach's like a president who comes from, I think he was at Spotify beforehand, right? Like that's like a real.
Yeah, he's definitely.
I don't know how else to put that, but like that's like a grown up hire. You hired a president of your company. What does that even
mean? It's gone from like the Jesser YouTube channel to Jesser Industries.
What does that even mean? And why did you get to a point where you're like, you know what? We need a president.
Yeah. So I felt like we got to like 0 to 10 million as a company. But to get to 10 million to 100 million, I was like, I need someone who's very experienced in the business world.
Is that revenue or subscribers?
I would just say like company. Okay. Or revenue, company value.
Okay,
yeah.
Got it. Like 0 to 10 million, you felt like you could do that yourself. But 10 million to 100 million, it's like,
Exactly. So it's just like business opportunities like outside of them and then maximizing it is kind of like his goal. And then also he's helping a lot with the content. So it's like now we're like trying to pitch different show ideas with like a lot of NBA players have production companies. So like, okay, how do I pitch them an idea?
Interesting. You
know, so we're doing, he's helping with stuff like that. And then just different bigger projects, but I really wanted to have someone who just was like at that level, like mm-hmm. who has been in the game and like just knows big companies or whatever. Yeah. And just like, I want to grow the company as much as possible. So
does that take like that. Some weight off of you to hire a president? Like, or were there responsibilities that you had that now you get to share with him or that he takes?
Yeah, on? I think it definitely takes a weight off. I mean, yeah. what he's capable of doing, I'm not capable of doing. Like yeah. he's like great at networking and just knows like business sense or mm-hmm. like how we should structure our org chart. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I never went yeah. to business school. Mm-hmm. I'm just guessing with everything.
Yeah. Also, like, you got your friends coming to you if maybe they want to raise or they want to change in their, mm-hmm. their comp, or like, they're like, hey, Jesser, do we have health insurance? It's like there's all these things that happen when you become a real company.
Yeah, we right? just got health insurance.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. See, yeah, you got a grown up and now yeah. you got health insurance.
Yeah, we got benefits. So if you want to work at Bucket Squad, we have benefits. It's rare in the creator space.
Wow. It is rare. Wow. It's rare because yeah. we, like, oh, all yeah. of us just fell into this and we're like, I don't know. We don't know what we're doing.
Do benefits, yeah. like 401k. Yeah. I don't know what that is, yeah. but I have it. Like, yeah.
That's great,
know.
Though.
Yeah. I think though, like, you know, it's funny because you have that conversation of like, okay, yeah, 0 to 10 million and then 10 million to 100 million. But I actually think in your situation, there's this really interesting reality that in our world, like, the product that you have is access to whatever your audience is. And based on what that audience is or who that audience is the potential value that your company can get to, mm-hmm. right? And because your audience is young sports fans, I think the potential value is so high because you're solving a problem for an industry that has a ton of money and needs to solve that mm-hmm. problem, right? Like the NBA and the NFL, they need younger fans.
Yeah, their problem is definitely because Gen Z is smaller yeah. generation than the generation before, and they watch less of sports. And right. it's like, that's my audience.
Yes.
It's like those kids. So,
not only do you have a captive sports audience, a sports audience also is willing to spend money, right? Mm-hmm. Like when you grow up playing sports, your parents will buy you equipment. Mm-hmm. Or like if you play basketball, mm-hmm. you buy shoes, you buy a jersey, you'll buy. So like you have a crop of people where the financial decision maker is the kid, but the financier is the parents, which yeah. is a great scenario. And then you also have this captive audience that these people who have billions of dollars, mm-hmm. meaning the NBA and the NFL, yeah. they're trying to access your audience. So you are in this sweet spot where I believe like, your opportunity is immense right now.
Yeah, there's a lot of opportunity in the sports yeah. world.
I think it's a bit of accessing your audience, but also your knowledge and understanding of how you even acquire that audience.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because there's obviously something that they're not doing that you are doing. Mm-hmm. What do you think it is about what you do that does actually attract that young sports fan that maybe the NBA hasn't done to date?
I think my content for those kids is just so much more like relatable, and like kids don't really watch like full games anymore. They like highlights, so they like yeah. the fast paced stuff. And one like the YouTube content is just faster paced. And then like it's like, for example, I guess like I'm just naturally hyped to see like these players like LeBron, or I'm like, oh yeah. my god, that's LeBron. But then if you watch any video, it's like just an interview with LeBron just asking him questions. But then it's like it's just so much more relatable, mm-hmm. and it's like, I've been blessed enough. A lot of the videos are like what kids would dream to do, like go to 3 NBA games. Yeah, that's like totally. A dream. Like yeah. I've had parents come up to me and be like, oh, my son made me watch your videos. And like, we went to 3 NBA games.
Oh, really?
Like wow. 30 hours, we've been flying everywhere. And like,
wow, the NBA should make like a.
They really want to do it.
They do?
They're just like the video.
Oh, they want to do what you've done.
I was
yeah.
going to say, if the NBA did like.
Partnered with an airline and
yeah,
did like
partnered
a package.
With an airline.
It's like,
yeah.
we'll where get like you to 3 games.
250
in a weekend
people or, in a commercial mm-hmm. airplane could pay some, you know, high price to go to 3. Mm-hmm. I bet you there'd be a ton of parents.
Oh my God. Yeah. And the NBA's, I mean, NBA's been great too. Like they work with me so much. They've been such a blessing. Like so much of the content I'm able to do is because of them
yeah.
and like the relationship there. So I think they definitely like see it more than like a lot of the other sports leagues, like trying to like have creators do things mm-hmm. and work with creators like as much as possible. Every big event, they're always bringing out creators. So they definitely really are getting it.
Yeah. I think the NBA was quicker to understand social than anyone else. But mm-hmm. I do want to just go back to something you said that I think is really important, is that you bring the childlike wonder back to sports, mm-hmm. where it's like LeBron James is a superhero. Mm-hmm. So like mm-hmm. when you see him, it's exciting. right? Like, yeah. And I think I understand what you're saying, that it becomes very normalized when you're watching a game. No one's excited to see LeBron. They're just like, yeah, LeBron's there and he does something amazing. And yeah, the commentators,
especially the people who work for the networks, they're like, this is part of my job. I see LeBron every day. Let's ask him a question. Okay, cool. But you are that professional fan.
We get to
live through you in that experience and be like, oh my gosh, it is crazy to see LeBron. Like,
so I want to bring up, you talked about formats that work, you know, and like repeating those formats and then experimenting. A format that really like captured my attention on your channel was this like secret NBA player, meaning like guess the secret NBA player. Where essentially there's a group of people, they're all wearing masks. One of them is an NBA player. And then the judges, which is you, your buddies, and eventually Giannis and like NBA players, which is crazy, are guessing which one the NBA player is. That is a fantastic format.
Yeah, shout out to Jubilee, bro.
That's Jubilee? Yeah.
Jubilee inspired. Meaning
inspired. Jubilee inspired, yeah.
I was just with Jason, the CEO of Jubilee yesterday.
Yeah, they're awesome.
They're awesome. So that was inspired by Jubilee.
Oh, yeah,
like
definitely.
Guess the, guess that's the smart.
So how did that episode with Giannis specifically come together?
So that, like getting Giannis in the video was definitely years in the making. Because like I did a video with him at VidCon once, like way back in the day where he
came to VidCon?
He was, Nike had a booth, a basketball court, and he like taught me how to Eurostep. So I met him there, and then I played in the celebrity game, and then him, Thanasis, Alex, they were all the coaches for the celebrity game. And then Alex was getting more into YouTube, his younger brother, and we had collabed. And then I was always like, oh, we got to get Giannis in a video, and then just pitched him an idea. And then Alex was just like, yo, Alex and Giannis were like, yo, we could do it on this date. And at first I wanted to do like a real life basketball video, but he couldn't do real life basketball at the time. So I was like, I had like a week to prepare Guess the Secret NBA Player, and I didn't know who was going to be the secret NBA player. And
you had Giannis booked.
I had Giannis booked, but no NBA player. Yeah.
Okay. Got it.
So then I was just struggling. I messaged like hundreds of players on Instagram, like just calling people's agents and stuff like, please. And it was so hard to find someone, but finally I got an NBA player.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you didn't like hit up the NBA to be like, hey, because I guess if it's an official like NBA collab, it'd be more complex.
Yeah. A lot more complex.
Got it.
But it was crazy. Like he literally came all the way down to my warehouse, which is not close to LA.
It was
super cool.
Wow.
He was super nice. I love him. He's goated.
Do you see that format? Is that like a big format for you this year? Or when do you abandon a format? When are you like, we've done that enough?
I guess when it stops banging, the videos stop doing well. Like, I want to do more of those. It's just really hard to coordinate those. So, like, I just locked in a judge for one. So, I'm like, okay, now I need to find the secret NBA player. Like, I want to do Guess the Secret NFL player.
Oh, that's cool.
Maybe just, like, Guess the Secret pro athlete and then have – it could be any sport. But, I definitely want to do more of that format. It's just – there's a lot of formats on my channel that do super, super well but require, like – I guess like celebrity guest talent. And then those videos, it's like, I want to do more of them, but I'm trying to be better at networking and figure it out, but it is hard, especially like it's during the NBA season.
Yeah. Sure.
Okay. So like everyone's kind of like booked off.
Is there any structure around how you come up with ideas? You know, you say that's Jubilee inspired, but is there like a Monday meeting where you're pitching ideas and people bring that to the table? Or is that just something in your head? Oh, that'd be cool.
So the team we have just like a ideas meeting, and then everyone will just come with like two ideas fleshed out, and a ton of great ideas have come from my team that I never came up with. We don't do that every week, but we try to do that more often now. And then the great ideas will come from that, and then I'll always just be thinking of ideas all the time, and then it's just a mix of the two for ideas.
When Zach came in and you have a president now, did he look at your like operation and like a week in the life at Bucket Squad? And did he make changes of like, now we're going to operate like this?
No, not really. He was like, okay, coming into this business, like the content side of it is doing extremely well. Like I'm going to try not to touch that at all. Just like let you guys do what you do. Like he's not really involved in production besides like helping getting collabs.
Yeah.
So he kind of just like, whatever's working, I don't need to touch this. Yeah. Was like his
mindset. Guys are making like 25, 28 videos a month.
If you include shorts.
With shorts and reacts. Yeah. So it's kind of just like you guys do that. Like you have enough to focus on.
Yeah.
I mean, that's enough to focus on for a team. And how big is the content team?
So on the main channel, it's probably, let me think, like 7 people in person, and then like 4 or 5 editors.
Wow.
So maybe like 12.
Just for the main channel.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people. Yeah. And are you managing those people, or do you have producers that manage?
Oh, no, we have other people that manage people.
Got it. Yeah. Wow. That's crazy.
I'm curious. You said you make 2 shorts a week. What's the case for shorts? I feel like we're sort of fighting to convince ourselves to prioritize shorts a little bit here. Mm-hmm. What do they do for you? How do they fit in?
Well, for me, shorts are just like, I would have never been at 10 million subscribers, 18 million subscribers without shorts. Like, shorts carried my channel past 10 million subscribers. So like, for me, that's why I wanted to do it. Cause I was like, okay, I want to get to the 10 million mark, like a lot of subscribers. And it's funny, cause like, I feel like I've heard on y'all's podcast is a lot of creators feel like the subscriber number is a vanity metric or whatever, but it's like brands don't feel that way.
Yeah, that's
true. So that's why I feel like it's still valuable. But I mean, it's really just like, do you want to get more subscribers? Then you should do shorts. And now it's interesting, like seeing everyone go into dubbing is like the next phase. Mm. And it's like, if I could dub my shorts, then people will see shorts way more than videos. Like, they get so much more views. So it's like, if I could do shorts in other languages now, then people will see me in that language, then see the long form. So I guess if you're dubbing, that could be a case of like going hard on shorts. So you could like, once you do go into the other language, there's a way for people to find you easier, is a way to look at it. But I mean, I struggle with it too, because I was posting like 5 shorts a week last year in Q4. So, but now I'm going down to 2.
Yeah.
What makes a viral short? For you specifically, do you have like, because I watched the one where you, we were talking about it this morning, where you throw the football over the house. That's funny.
Like, yeah, I think definitely one thing that makes them go viral is if you don't have any speaking in it and it's like physical comedy, because then all the languages, because those videos, like my shorts that have the most views, those over the house football throws, have so many views from India.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe that's why I like it. Yeah, it's just something in my DNA that makes me like that short.
They're language agnostic. Yeah. They don't even need dubbing.
Exactly. I mean, it's why Cobby Lame is like so popular.
I mean, blowing up the basketball is another great one. Yeah. It's a great short, right? So it's like, oh yeah, you could turn the sound off and I'm just going to watch until you blow this basketball up. Yeah.
I feel like most of my viral like shorts, it starts with like a question and then the video is just answering that question. And people just want to know the answer. It's like, it can be the dumbest stuff too. Yeah. It can be like, how many layers of tape does it take to stop a human? And it's just 1 layer, 2 layers, 5 layers. And it always ends with someone just getting hurt.
Yeah, it is relatively simple. I think that the interesting thing is probably, you know, when I think about, I'm curious your perspective on the future of sports entertainment. Mm-hmm. Like, where does it go? And is it actually presently a problem, you know, that young kids aren't watching full games? If so, what happens next? Like, what happens to the way we watch sports? Is it going to be like 5 different streams where I can hear you and your buddies doing the commentary for a game? Mm-hmm. Is it actually everyone's going to watch it in shorter bits? Because it feels like, again, like the NBA, the NFL, a lot of people are trying to solve this problem of like, how do we get people to watch these games? Like, are full games still going to be highly coveted? Or
I think the full games will always be there. But to your point, how it's like, oh, you could watch the game while I'm doing it, or how Dude Perfect does theirs. Mm-hmm. And like, if you haven't seen that Dude Perfect, for those watching, well, you can watch the NFL game while they're doing challenges on Amazon, I think it is.
Thursday Night Football, yeah.
And then they have like the Nickelodeon version for the kids. And I think they're just going to keep doing alternate methods of watching the game. Like, even now Kevin Hart's doing one for NBA.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Where he has a separate stream.
Uh-huh, but it's on TV. It's like a whole channel. That's just an alt stream of him.
Interesting.
So that will definitely continue to be a thing. I think people will just, the younger generation will consume on social apps more than TV. So that's what, like, TV's just struggling, but they're still consuming it, but just not in those long sessions, more like NBA cutdowns. Those will get 1 million views a day, like all the time, every day, of just the highlights of games.
I'm sure the challenge though for the NBA there is that that's not as monetizable,
mm-hmm.
right? Because like the live game is where big ticket advertising gets sold, because it's eventized. It's like everyone's eyeballs are on this live game. It's you need more Super Bowls, right? Like highlights of the Super Bowl are not as monetizable as the Super Bowl.
And
itself.
I think the NBA is trying, like, you see the in-season tournament. That used to be not a thing. But that's like a big thing to sell advertising
that's
to.
True,
and like people want to see who's going to win that championship.
Do the games need to be shorter?
Nah, I don't think so. I don't think you can mess with the integrity of the sport with it.
Is that
just don't find that NBA games specifically are that long. Like no, actually, the games when you go, they're over before you know it. It's more
NFL
like
games. NFL long.
Games are long. Are long.
Do you think those need to be shorter? Or like, because I'm also a purist. Like, when I watch sports, like I grew up on watching sports. Like, I want to keep them as is, but I also look at like this next generation that's would prefer to watch Jesser than a full NBA game. Mm-hmm. How does the NBA?
Yeah, I feel like you can never like adjust with that type of things. Like. The nature of the sport, like it has to be what it is. Also for like records and everything. And I don't think they would ever touch that, but I think it is a real challenge. Like it is for the big giant sports leagues. They're really trying to figure it out. But I mean, they do a great job of posting content on social. They all are like the NFL and Taylor Swift. They're like attacking that. Like they're doing a great job.
I mean, dude, what a moment for the NFL. Like they couldn't, that's like,
they brought up Taylor Swift so much.
If we find out in like 3 years that was actually a brand deal.
Oh my God.
They're like the NFL pitched and they were like, listen, Taylor, you're going to date one of the stars that's going to make it to the Super Bowl. Like
imagine.
That's like, the storyline is unbelievable, but like the insane. NFL can't bank on this storyline year after year unless they start, you know.
Crafting these.
Yeah. I think the leagues are doing the best they can. Like they're like NFL's got, or I don't even know if that's the NFL or Amazon. I guess it would be Amazon more than the NFL, like doing the Dude Perfect stream or like, I think they are trying their best to figure it out, but it is hard to like get people to watch full games. I think what I like about NFL, because I just got into NFL this year, it's like, I like that all the games are on Sunday. So I got Red Zone and it's like constantly the best moment of each game. Like I love watching NFL Red Zone, but the full games, unless it's like my team, I'm not as, or it's like playoffs, I'll watch all the full games, but
you know, I just watched the like the Pro Bowl weekend, the skills competition for the NFL, and it's like, it's interesting, but some of it is just continuously too complex. Like what you just said about shorts being like, it's a really simple question, and when you look at like destroying with one-on-ones, that's like, he boiled something down to a really simple form. This guy is gonna guard this guy. One of them is going to win.
Yeah.
And then it repeats over and over, right? So there's like, it's basically, he's introducing a question. Two guys line up, who's going to win? You got to watch, right? And so I think that the NBA, the NFL, as they look at like ancillary content, shoulder programming, how to get new viewers, like everything you've said in this conversation is something that programming people or people at those leagues should be thinking about. Okay, we have to feed our core fans, right? And we have to attract new viewers.
Yeah,
right.
It's the same thing
it's
as earlier.
The exact same thing, right? Like it's it's, we're all in the same business. We're all in the business of capturing audience, and I feel like they have a lot to learn from people like yourself and D.
I think the biggest competitive advantage for creators is that we can change the format. It's like you can't change the length of an NBA game or an NFL game. You can't change the rules, but D has no problem getting people together and doing a one-on-one competition to win money. Right? Like we have the option to make all of these mini games that can be experiments that will reach those new audiences. Right?
Yeah.
It's definitely interesting.
I'm curious when you think about like from 10 million to 100 million, what does it take to get there for your company? Is it, you know, building out products? Is it building brands? Like what comes alongside the media?
I feel like it will never be off ad revenue getting to that point. Yeah. So it has to be those different things. So it's like, for me, hopefully it's like trying to get Bucket Squad apparel as integrated into the basketball community. It's just like, yo, that's a dope basketball brand. Not that's Jester's merch or anything. So like trying to build that up is like the main thing, is like building as a legit brand. Like our products are amazing. Just doing that. And then, other products, like we're doing a hoop. I was telling you about, we're doing a mini hoop in Walmart, and that one's like Jester branded.
Oh, so that's going into Walmart.
In Walmart.
Oh, wow. Yeah, cool, man.
Let's go.
That's cool.
That's awesome. Yeah.
I mean, that's crazy.
When is that happening?
Mid-April.
We're going to have soon.
That. Yeah. So that will be like Jesser branded. Oh, yeah. You guys got to have one. You got to put it up there.
Yeah. So you have a Jesser branded mini hoop. That's cool. In all Walmarts?
It's, I think like half, because a lot of the Walmarts are like grocery stores.
Okay.
Yeah.
But so I have to do well with that product. I'm like, I have to sell this out, because if I could sell it out, I could get multiple products maybe.
Yeah, you have
so,
to send us one.
Yeah.
Oh, 100%.
That's cool. Can you talk about the shoes or no?
Bug Squad shoes?
Yeah.
I could talk about them.
Because that, like, I saw those and I was like, oh, those are cool. Mm-hmm. And that's hard. Like basketball. Well,
so they were not basketball shoes. I will say that they were trainers.
Okay.
And then for that, a company approached me, Soul Savvy, and was like, hey, would you want to do your own shoe? And I was like, of course I want to do my own shoe. Who doesn't want to do their own shoe? And then they made a shoe for another creator before that too. But yeah, and then did the shoe, got to like pick out all the materials, all the little details to make it special to me. And then that was just super cool because it's like all my idols have shoes.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
That I look up to. Yeah. So I was like, I got my own shoe.
Do you see that as becoming like a big part of what Bucket Squad does? Shoes?
I feel like in the next like year or two, probably not, because it's like a one time we just wanted to do it. But I would love to offer basketball shoes one day, and my dream would be like, oh, I'm Bucket Squad sponsors some NBA players and they're wearing the Bucket Squad shoes in games. But I feel like that's definitely like years down the line, because it's like starting a new basketball shoe brand. It's okay. It's like my competitors, Nike, Adidas.
But you're looking right now, like, again, we're talking about how sports entertainment reaches a younger audience. Mm-hmm. Mr. Beast is sponsor of the Charlotte Hornets,
that
right?
That is true.
With Feastables. Mm-hmm. But it's the Beast logo on their jersey, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is wild. And then Prime is now the official drink of the Lakers. Right. And so, and I think there's like, there's definitely a lot of incentive for the league and the teams to partner with creators because it comes with added marketing. So you never know.
Hopefully, man. Like that's the dream. That would definitely be the dream.
Again, you're in a really good spot for that to happen. So, yeah, it's interesting that apparel is a big piece of that. I forgot to ask this to you, but I was curious if you remember your first brand deal. And like what that experience was like.
I do.
What was your first brand deal?
So I forget the name of an app, but it was a basketball app, right? And they promised me a collab with Andrew Wiggins for it. And then like they were like, it was the day to shoot. And they were coming to my house for it. And they were like, oh, actually, Andrew Wiggins couldn't show up. So I still had to do this ad. And the whole video was like a skit ad for the company.
Oh, the entire video.
And I like didn't get, I got paid like absolutely nothing. I was like, oh my God, I get to make a video with an NBA player. Like, well, this is going to be the best thing ever. And then, yeah, they scammed me pretty much because Andrew Wiggins was never there.
That's a bad base.
So it was a bad first experience on brand deals.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. And now, are you building your own internal sales team, or do you work? You still work with external representation?
Yeah, right? External representation. Yeah. I feel like that's another level. I don't know if I'm there yet.
Yeah, I mean it's interesting. I've been thinking about it quite a bit as like, you know, traditional representation is talent representation, or even like I'm sure your dad had representation as a producer, right?
Yeah,
where it's like here's a single person that we represent to go do a craft. But what's interesting is we're actually building companies. Mm-hmm. So now we have representation that represents our whole company kind of, right?
Well, it's interesting because like I work with Knight, right? Yeah. And then all the brand deals, anything YouTube related, that's all them. But then like, I'm like, apparel is like my thing.
For sure. Yeah,
so it's like carved out.
But you have too much overhead. Yeah, to deal with. Like you can't really pay a high percentage to a representation when like you get a brand deal. Let's say you get a 100K brand deal, right? You have you named 15 people who work on your main channel. So you got to pay their salaries too.
Yeah.
So like you're also paying the representation a commission, but they're taking commission off the top. So now you have, you know, 85 to spend on everything. And you have so much, you start to get so much expense that's where I get curious if creators are starting to think about that. Now I would say like, I think no matter what, you're paying a high fee for someone to help you do sales. But I've just been fascinated by that thought of like, how partnerships come together in the future of this, because we're not just talent getting placed into a movie or getting placed into a thing. Mm-hmm. We're like,
it's a whole company.
It's a whole company. Mm-hmm. It's not like, it's interesting.
It is very interesting.
Yeah.
Do you have a dream collaboration in mind that, you know, if you were able to get that collaboration with a certain format, a certain concept, it would be your most watched video?
Yes. LeBron James. LeBron. Like if I got a LeBron collab, like no one has ever done a LeBron James collab YouTube video, that would be the most legendary thing I ever do, I think.
There is a photo of you like playing a carnival game with him.
But you're like down on the end.
You seen that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the story behind that. For Space Jam, they like rented out the entire park. Was it Universal? Yeah, Universal. And then that was a crazy night because just so many celebrities were there. It was it was ridiculous. But LeBron, I saw him walking over to the games and I like rushed to that corner seat because I was like, bro, if I win, I'm making a video. Like I beat LeBron James one in this game or something. But then neither of us won.
What do you think you would make if LeBron's like, hey, man, I got an afternoon. I'll come over.
If I could just do like a shooting challenge with him, or it doesn't even have to be crazy. It could literally just be like a shooting competition.
I feel like one-on-one.
One-on-one
would be super fun.
One-on-one would be the best video ever.
Yeah. And some level of like high stakes one-on-one would be interesting. You know, like,
yeah.
Yeah. You played in this Creator Cup, right? Mm-hmm. Which is the NBA. Is it an NBA like sponsored thing or is it?
Yes. So for the NBA's in-season tournament that they just did this year, they wanted to test like a creator match. So it was on the NBA's court. They put it together and we all had like NBA jerseys on. And it was just straight creators. And they had like a celebrity game type where there's like challenges in the game and different fun things like that. But got to play in that. That was really cool.
Do you think the NBA should continue doing stuff like that? Like, is that?
Yeah, I think they definitely should. And I think they could just make it a way bigger event because like the celebrity game always is great.
Yeah.
And like at in-season tournament, like why not add on a creator version of that and get like the biggest creators in the world and sell it out.
The Sidemen football charity match is something to look at, right?
Yeah.
Would you ever play in that, by the way?
Oh, bro, I want to play it.
Yeah,
I want to play it. Sidemen, let me know. I'm ready.
Because you're a soccer guy.
I love soccer.
Like you could ball in that.
Oh yeah, that's my goal. I was literally planning like once I get closer to the announce, I've been practicing my juggling. So I'm gonna do a video.
Okay,
where, like,
if anyone from the Sidemen is watching.
Yes, I'm gonna do a video where I'm just juggling like the ball the whole time, and I'm like, I've been playing soccer my whole life. You guys keep losing, or the YouTube All-Star team is always trash. Yeah. They need people to actually play soccer, or I'll probably call it football, so they don't get offended.
But that's crazy. Like they're packing out stadiums. Like feel like there's a basketball version of that. In the 1,000%,
right? The Ace family did it at Staples Center. They sold the whole thing out.
That's true.
Back in the day, but
that's true.
Like I would love to do that, and that's something I've always wanted to do is host my own creator match and make it a really big thing. And it's just a lot to put on, but it's on the bucket list for sure.
There's one business that I like. If I can pitch you a business, and I'm curious if you've thought about this, like basketball camp. Mm-hmm. Have you thought about that?
I have thought about that.
And what are the like? What's stopping you from doing it, or is it something that you want to do?
I'm gonna do a little like a clinic later in this year with the Knicks. So we're gonna test that out, see how that does. But it's just like figuring out like the logistics of that. Like probably have to partner with someone who does camps.
Yeah, who does camps.
But it's definitely been on like the company ideas list. It's been like basketball camps for sure.
You're definitely like the internet's camp counselor. I feel like when it comes to basketball.
And if there's like, you know, content side of that, I think like the thing that's interesting about someone like you is that the kids would come to basketball camp, obviously to play basketball. Mm-hmm. But if there's an element of it too, where they come home with like a cool video or learn more about how to make their own basketball videos, if you add like a content element to that now you're speaking
really cool.
to like kids into basketball and every kid who's into YouTube and social media. Like that's
they get to play some of the games that you play and like take part in those. It's more about fun than it is necessarily about like being the best basketball player.
Mm-hmm. One idea I always wanted to do was like Top Golf, like a basketball version of Top Golf. I thought that would be so fun where it's like you got the bar food and then it's like the hoop, but it's like a bowling alley. So all the balls come back to you and you could do like 3-point, all different challenges do in the videos, like money ball and all that.
And like hoops at varying distances.
Yeah, like maybe the hoop backs up and like that's the rim can change sizes and it's just absolutely crazy.
Ooh, I feel like that's a video you should make.
That would be sick
too. Start with a video.
Yeah.
Like I like make the prototype, do a video and then, but then it's like, oh my God. Now I have to figure out restaurant games business. Like that would be, I don't know where to start.
Yeah,
like
know,
these things sound amazing. I'm like, okay, how would I actually do
is that
this
a business I really want to be in?
Yeah. Like I have no idea.
What's the pie chart of the business right now? Is it still primarily advertising and brand deals, or is merchandise and like Bucket Squad starting to become a bigger portion of it?
Yeah, that's definitely becoming a bigger portion. I would say like, I mean, I could be totally wrong, but maybe like ad revenue is like 50% and brand deals is like 30% and then the apparel is like 20%, maybe something like that.
Okay. Yeah.
I would say how it looks.
Did that equal 100? I think so.
I wasn't
counting.
Yeah. I hope so.
I think it did. It 50, did. 30, yes. 50, 30, 20. 20. Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. We'll cut that part out. Yeah.
What advice do you have for someone who's just starting out on YouTube right now?
I would say my number one advice, if you're just starting out, is literally just have like fun with it. Make videos with your homies because it's more fun to make videos with your friends, and then do it for that reason. And then you got to fall in love with it because I see so many people start and they're starting off with these videos that are like very trends. They're just like trying trends. They're just doing it really bad. And it's like some of these can't even be fun to film.
Yeah.
Totally. So I would say just like literally just have fun with it is the number one thing. and then don't make anything you're not having fun with, because that is just, you're going to quit. So I think that's the most important thing.
That's good advice. Mm-hmm.
If you could pitch the NBA or NFL like a YouTube series that they should be doing.
Oh, that they should be
doing.
Yeah,
what do you think it would be? Like if the leagues are watching, like how should they change up their YouTube strategy?
Oh, on YouTube?
Yeah. I mean, or maybe it's so on TV. Videos. Like what should they be doing differently from a media and content perspective?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. I feel like if you think back to COVID, right? The bubble.
Yeah.
All the players started vlogging on their own. Like JaVale McGee was doing a vlog, Matisse Thybulle, and like the content coming out of the bubble was so amazing. It's just hard because it's like the NBA, can they tell players to do that? I mean, it's kind of like the players have to want to do it, but as the generations get younger and younger, I think more and more players you'll see are like live streaming on Twitch or making YouTube videos like that. So it's finding out just any ways they can to empower the players to make the content, because at the end of the day, people watch like for the players. It's like, especially NBA,
would you
so
ever
player
create
driven.
Like an athlete agency for YouTube channels where like athletes can come to you to like learn how to do YouTube?
No, I probably would never do that.
Got it. Does anything like that exist? Or
there's agencies out there that manage social media for strictly like athletes. I know there's a lot of those that they help out with that I've seen and I'll over the years. But I mean, if someone asked me, I might help them, but I feel like that would be, that's just like another, that was the focus.
I know. The focus. I'm like pitching you all these things, but this is like, I think the natural state of a creator is like, you're a creator. You want to create things. Mm-hmm. And then like, once you find the thing that works, it's almost like overwhelming to just be like, I need to just feed this thing. Mm-hmm. So my mind always goes.
I feel like if I were the NBA or the NFL, I would look
at— Do you guys have ideas? I'm curious.
I would look at what's happened with New Heights with Jason and Travis Kelce and look at a player podcast and think, okay, how can we help players make that possible? Help put them on the right path. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I think right now the NFL and the NBA YouTube channels are just, they're flooded. With highlights
and
content. And maybe they have to be, but I definitely think they can start helping to get athletes started up with new channels that maybe they're partnered into.
It doesn't even have to be the let's say the NBA we're talking about. It doesn't even have to be their socials. It can be their players' socials. It all goes to the NBA at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think
empowering them.
You think about what we did at Spotter Summit. Like, if the NBA hosted a summit where they brought like a bunch of content creators and a bunch of athletes who are interested together to like brainstorm for a weekend or something, and just like we present some stuff to them around like how do you do this and what are you interested? Are you interested in podcasting? Are you interested in like making short form? Are you interested in like long form? Because it's probably overwhelming for an athlete to be like, all right, I got a buddy who films. Maybe he could film me. I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, is that how it works?
I think it's tough too. It's like a lot of them. Like some of the top players don't even have Instagrams and stuff. It's like, what the heck? Like they just don't care at all. And then it's like, they also, I feel like a lot of players have grown to hate the media too.
Sure.
So that's also a tough thing. So it definitely would have to be the players that want to do it. The younger players at least. So it's a hard question.
They may not even have the opportunity, to your point though, to learn what they would like, right? Like there's no space or time in their schedule, I'm sure, to like meet with people like you and be like, what formats are out there, right?
Yeah,
like, what could be sustainable for me that I would like to do whether I'm playing in the NBA or after I'm done?
Mm-hmm. I'm pitching it right now to the NBA.
NBA, give us a call.
NBA times Creator Summit.
I saw the NFL, right? They did the quarterbacks one where they followed the quarterbacks and now they're doing that for NBA.
Oh, they are?
That's cool.
I'm pretty sure.
Oh, cool. I love sports docs like that. Like,
those are my favorite. Yeah, like the Jordan doc. Like,
oh my God.
Sports media doesn't get better than like following top players.
Yeah.
So good.
But the amazing thing is just back to your point of like question answer, like sports just starts with a question. Like a game just starts with a question. Who's going to win?
Exactly.
And then you build stakes on top of that. Well, if they win, then this happens. If they win, then this happens. And like, and then this player, you know, has this narrative and this player has this. Mm-hmm. So it's like the best packaging. For
sports
story.
Is always a story. Every game is a story.
Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it so much.
Well, cool, man. Where do you think you're going to be at the end of this year, subscriber-wise, if you're still... You're still like kind of pushing on that
I think
number.
I'm slowing down on shorts uploads. Okay. So... Hey, if we hit 25 million, I'd be over the moon. That would be insane.
I mean, that's
so
that's
that would be the goal.
Crazy. And what's the Reacts channel at right now?
I think we're at like 2.4 million.
Do you see yourself going hard at Reacts the whole year, or are you?
I'm just trying to consistently do 10, just
10
every
a month.
Yeah, just stick that for the whole year.
So many. Yeah, I mean, cool, man. That's awesome.
Yeah. Hey, y'all are the best.
Dude, thank you so much for taking the time. I'm excited to see what's next. I really am very intrigued by the business you're building and like the opportunity in sports. So
I want to come check out your space.
Yeah, I'd love to come check out. Yeah, you have a warehouse that's like, what is it, 10,000 square feet?
10,000 square feet.
That's crazy.
It's sick.
And you film out of there.
Yeah, we're there like 5 days a week.
Oh, we got to come there all day.
Yeah, 100%. It's like an hour and a half maybe from LA.
Do you rent it or did you buy that warehouse?
I rent it.
You rent it. Mm-hmm. Okay.
That'd be sick one day. Hopefully.
Come, I gotta get better at basketball. Because if we get called up to like a Creator Cup, I gotta get better.
I just gotta get on the court, man. Yeah. I just gotta make a squat. Yeah. You know, I'm just trying to
bench warmer. Yeah.
I didn't even break a sweat. You know, I'm just trying to get on the court.
Yeah. Cool, man. Well, thanks.
Thanks, dude.
All right.
See ya.